the Canadian Bitcoiners podcast is just two guys and maybe a guest or two discussing Bitcoin, Bitcoin equities, and the related macroeconomic space. It's not meant to be financial advice, so please, if you're doing any investing after listening to our program, do your own research, do your own due diligence, and understand that any money you invest can be lost. The show is meant for entertainment purposes only, and we hope you enjoy the program. Friends and enemies, welcome to another episode of the Canadian Bitcoiners podcast number 116 here on the CBP Media Network, where our StreamYard account just told me that we are out of storage. So hopefully this records and stays somewhere so I can get the audio later to put up.
Oh man, could you imagine? This is just a...
My name is Joey. This is Len, the other panel.
You want to restart this? Let's start deleting shit and restart the show. Why not? Holy cow. This may be a one-off. So everybody listening watching in, this might be the only chance you get to witness and listen to this show.
That's right.
Who knows? There may not be an opportunity to make it an audio. And
it should stream to YouTube, right? If it goes to YouTube, I can probably pull down the audio, no problem.
Yeah, you should. You have the opportunity to download
I'll figure it out. I'm not that worried about it. We'll figure it out. We're innovators here. What's going on? How you doing over there? All right?
Yeah, just getting really busy with stuff. And I'm still pissed about the weather.
Yeah.
It is so freaking cold. This is the coldest June. It's January that I could ever remember. It's raining, cold, windy. It covers everything. It is not just on the, you know, next week's going to be summer. Who the heck would have said this would have been this bad? Yeah. Other than that, it's just, hey, okay, how about you?
Good, man. No complaints. Busy with work, busy with personal stuff that I won't share at the moment because I don't want to jinx it. But, you know, Len, it's a good sign that we're busy. We have shows basically every night this week. Tonight, we're supposed to have one tomorrow that I have to reschedule. Wednesday, maybe Thursday. Friday, I'll be in Toronto for the conference. Saturday, emceeing the conference. You'll be there making content. Sunday, conference. Monday, back on this show for more CBP content. It's going to be a busy, busy, busy 7 days here. Are you prepared? Are you mentally ready? Is your fortitude at an all-time high? What do you think?
Yeah, for me, it's an everyday thing. I'm always out there scrounging for information, chatting with people. So it's not really changing anything. It's par for the course. I've been at this continuously, except for that one time I got sick with a big C. Not the way I want to say that. A big C-19. That's probably the better way to say it. I've been at it continuously for 2 years and change.
Yeah.
Just fuel me up and let me go. So yeah, it's 7 days in a row, no big deal. 31 days in a row, we'll see what happens. No big deal.
Recording 7 days in a row is a lot. But anyway, we got a lot to talk about tonight. Obviously, the SEC on a bit of a rampage, as the episode title says. But first, as always, the sponsors of the CBP. EasyDNS, Mark and team, we love them. Uncensorable. But more importantly, okay, if you want to host your domain, get your email set up, virtual private servers. So that's if you've got an Oster client, if you have a BTC pay server you want to set up, if you want to bring over some stuff from another website, domain hoster that you don't like as much, Mark and team will take care of that for you. They'll help you move all your stuff over. In fact, Len was talking to Mark yesterday and got a little bit of support for a domain that I wasn't surprised to see. Can we say what domain we're trying to get some help for yesterday? No?
No, let's just leave it alone just in case anybody gets in trouble or anything like that.
Sure. But it's nothing. Funny domain.
Initially, by the name itself, nothing wrong. So it's just like saying the word turbo. I'm giving an example that's very close.
Sure. So you can take all that stuff from EasyDNS a la carte, or you can get it in a package. Either way is fine with Mark and team. And of course, tell them we sent you. Use CBP Media, your code, and you get 50% off your first big buy, which is great. We are, you know, as a weekly tradition here, we are working on our website still, and that's all I'll say. It's in progress, under construction.
One day. One day it will come to fruition. But not only are they sponsoring us, Joe, we have a second one, and that is Bull Bitcoin. And last week we had Francis come on our show and shill everything that Bull has to offer. I'm not going to give it justice because he knows it much better than I do. But all I can say is it's a great place to buy, sell, gift cards you can get them there. But the one thing that really attracts me, Joey, and a lot of other people is there's the potential, there's the opportunity to buy KYC free Bitcoin. It's rather simplistic and you're utilizing Canada Post to do it. So there's lots of availability out there. There's more Canada Post locations in Canada than there are Tim Hortons, and that's saying something. So by doing it, following the right measures, I posted a video how to do this. You could do it right. Get secure Bitcoin. And you know what? We have the code. It's going to be below in the audio and video. So if you haven't yet signed up to Bull Bitcoin, what are you doing? You get $20 after you sign up and fund your account. That is a great deal. Do it, or else you're going to be a no coiner.
It is crazy that you actually get, so you get the $20 plus you get another dollar for something else. Did you know that? It brings it to an even 21.
See that the 21, I don't know. I know it's 20 after you fund your account.
Our buddy Manny Monero told me 21. He got $21. So I think maybe you like use, unless when you fund it, you get the extra dollar. Is that what you get? You sign up, you get the 20 and then the one.
I can't say. I don't know. I haven't used the code obviously because I already have an account. So can't say. But really do it if you haven't already signed up. It's a great place to buy. And you can sell your Bitcoin too, but yeah. Who the heck wants to do that? And they also have liquid Bitcoin. There's maybe a market for that, very, very small, but still maybe some people may have an opportunity to use it. And also you can get Lightning. You could get Lightning right from there. So give your dirty fiat, get sats and Lightning, you're good to go.
You love to see it, man. You love to see it. So we got great sponsors on the program as always. We're on the hunt, I think, for one more, Len. I won't say who. Everyone could probably guess. So we're on the hunt for one more over here at the CBP. Listen, Len, very busy week. Let's start with the price of Bitcoin since we've been forgetting it the last like 3 weeks, I think. The price is $25,930 US right now.
And in Canadian, it's $34,663. Oh, it is what it is. Last week, we didn't have a chance to rhyme off our boosts, unfortunately, because we were so busy with Francis. So apologies for that. But this week, I want to say that thank you for everybody to sending us the boost, because I just redirected all boosts and everything else I received through Fountain by listening and having sats streamed over to me to Meet Premier Bitcoin. And it was around 14,000 sats in total. So Thank you to everybody out there that donated to us. And I donated essentially everything. And there's only one sat left in my wallet after I did a transaction. So we have a whole new set of boosts that I just want to read off here. Rander writes off, boost right away. There's a house in my neighborhood that's $150,000 overpriced. That's $720,000. It should be around $570,000. They've done two open houses, two weekends in a row. I haven't seen anyone check out the house. These people are totally delusional. The housing crash in Canada will melt faces. I'm not sure when that's going to happen. There may be a drawback in the price of the homes, but right now the price of homes are steadily increasing. That's what I'm seeing. I'm guessing you're seeing the same thing,
buddy. I'm seeing the same thing, buddy. Yep.
So Halo22B sends 1,000 sats. Great show as always. Thank you very much. Norman Remnant, 4,200 sats. Congrats on Bull sponsor. Francis is mint. Thank you very much. Moby TC Dick, gotta love the Foster. Guy Swan did a great impersonation the other day. I didn't hear it. I'm not sure if you did. So I should just check it out. Owen Lewis, 1212 sat, so 1212. Great rip, great guest. And he wasn't a guest. He was actually part of the show.
He's a friend of the show, man. Yeah, it's like if we brought like Mark or Francis, you know, like they're barely even guests anymore. You know, they've been on a handful of times. It's not no big deal.
Tesla Liberty writes in with 5,000 sats, by the way, based as fuck. Holy shit. This is with respect to the acceleration theory. I still donated those sats anyways, right, to me, Premier Bitcoin. And last but not least, BTC Priestess writes in for 888 sats for me, Premier Bitcoin, and puts a heart after it. So yeah, thank you for donating that, because that was sent right away to them. So thank you, everybody, that donated sats.
Outstanding. The community is so great on this show, man. Like the times that we've donated to different causes, I know we were doing it a little more openly when we first started taking the found donations, because at the end of the day, you know, like what are we going to do with that? We're just going to keep it and, you know, hoard it. I guess we could, but it's better to increase awareness and bring guests on that, you know, help people learn about some of the stuff that's going on in the Bitcoin space. And, you know, we are happy to share the wealth, and I think you guys want that too. You don't just want it in our pocket. It's better to do this stuff and push the mission forward, right? That's what we're all here for. So good of all you guys and girls to send us that stuff, and we'll keep doing that.
Yeah, we donated quite a bit. I mean, I didn't really announce much of the donations I've done, but hundreds of thousands of sats have been donated to various people or organizations out there that we deem fit. My Lightning node, which typically would have gotten all the sats in the end, is slowly being depleted over time. It's not being replenished. And that's just a result of just more sats going out than coming in. And that's just the nature of the business. But yeah, thank you very much. I mean, I'm blessed where I am right now. I have a house. A lot of people aren't in the same position I am. So I'll be happy to donate whatever I have. And yeah,
for sure.
Anyways, anything else you want to do before we just dive right into it?
I think we got to rip it, man. Got a pretty big couple of stories here to talk about. More developments since last week when we talked to Francis, obviously the next day with the SEC going after Coinbase. Let's get into it.
Yeah, well, we'll start off with Coinbase because, in my opinion, this is the biggest news in the past week. And the SEC is claiming that Coinbase has been operating since 2019 as an unregistered broker. And as a result, the SEC, they filed a lawsuit against them. And this is a similar lawsuit that they filed against Binance. And Coinbase, with respect to them, this is no small exchange. Binance is also another huge, huge company. But I'm going to talk about Coinbase now. Take a guess, Joey, how much Bitcoin they have on their platform.
User funds. Geez, I don't know. Million?
They say 2 million. This is with respect to their trading platform, custody, and so forth. So 2 million Bitcoin out of
10%.
This is from September 2022. So it's a little bit dated, this information. I don't know if A, that was truthful, or B, if anything has changed since then. Take that for what you wish. They also say they do hold 9,000 Bitcoin for their customers. That's 9,000 people that have bought Bitcoin that haven't taken it off their exchange. So people, you have to do yourself a favor, learn self-custody, don't rely on them for holding it because you could get rugged in the process. There is a number of different scenarios, examples that we go down this path, but I don't want to right now. With respect to Coinbase, they're saying that it's an unregistered national security exchange, also a broker, a clearing agency, and they are also failing to register the offer and sale of its crypto asset staking as a service program. Now, remember they got issued the Wells notice, Joey, not too long ago, only March 20,
maybe
a little more. It's almost three months now, March 22 to be specific. And at that time, the Wells notice said aspects of the company's spot market staking service, Coinbase Earn, Coinbase Prime, and Coinbase Wallet, that was being looked at, and they may potentially have been given some further action, and this is what happened. So I'm looking at that Wells notice, Joey. This is just a continuation, this serving of these lawsuit papers of that Wells notice. So I'm not sure why anybody would be surprised, because they announced it to the world. Here's your Wells notice. Everybody's aware. I don't know why people would be sideswiped.
I have some thoughts on why people are surprised and why they're surprised, but I want to let you finish the details and the frame here, because I think it'll be important. You always have a lot of good information. So let's just keep going, and then maybe you and me can do a little back and forth.
Well, so this whole episode here with Coinbase, this is just another one in this whole saga. They went to SEC and Gensler was going after other exchanges, Binance and Coinbase. This happened on consecutive days. That's absolutely incredible. And they're saying this is for protection of the consumer, blah, 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 because you're looking at BlockFi, FTX, Voyager, and so many more. But a few more items of note. The United States, they're sitting on themselves about 200,000 Bitcoin. This is seizure through Silk Road and a whole bunch of other nefarious enterprises in the past little while. How do they sell this, Joey?
Well, we know. They go to Coinbase.
The irony of all this, they're claiming at least one arm of their government, the SEC, is claiming that it is unregistered security, but another arm that sees it and wants to sell it and reap the rewards of that sale, they're using Coinbase. I don't know. But anyways, with all this, Coinbase, they do not give a fuck. They said they're not going to shut down their staking service. And just today, they tweeted out, We have conducted extensive reviews of all the digital assets listed on our platform. Additional independent reviews have been conducted by various associated token foundations. Results are shocking. These assets are not securities, but rather commodities like wheat or cattle. So you're having these additional independent reviews by various associated token foundations. Of course, they're going to give this fucking information. It's in their best interest to say that their stuff is not listed as a security. It's fucking a commodity, but it's not wheat or cattle. Definitely it is not. But the Coinbase credit, I'll have to say that they seem to have been a good actor in all this. They've been always trying to engage the SEC for info to get approval and to try to fit under the law. They even got approval for an IPO back in March of 2021, and I'm sure the SEC gave them the green light as one of the many approvals required to do that. What has changed in the past 2 years and 3 months since the IPO? The only thing I could think is the staking of the service. I don't think they offered that when they IPO'd. So that may be the real sticking point here. But another thing of note is Coinbase is one of a few different centralized exchanges. They've been invited to apply for an operational license in Hong Kong. So are they jurisdiction shopping as a result of all this? I don't know, because the timing of this, the SEC going after these exchanges and Coinbase doing this, it seems rather suspicious to me. But of all everything that's been done, and as a global thing of what the SEC has been doing as more of a whole level, why have they not mentioned ETH? It seems odd. If you look at ETH versus everything else, it fits the mold. It's a security just like everything else they listed. Why don't they list it as a security? I don't know. What are your thoughts?
There's a lot going on here, man. Let's start with whether or not we should be dancing on graves here. I know there's a lot of Bitcoiners who don't like Coinbase. You know, I have a little bit of Coinbase stock, not a ton, that I've basically marked to zero already in my head. So, you know, make of that what you will, full disclosure for people who don't know that. I don't know if we should be dancing on Coinbase here. If you want to dance on stuff like Matic, Cardano, you know, and these other kind of shitcoin securities, I'm okay with that, I think. I look across the landscape and I see like Charles Hoskinson suddenly tweeting out that we should put aside our differences and get together and make sure that we're, you know, supporting the crypto ecosystem, blah, blah, blah. These guys all want to cut the legs out from underneath Bitcoin every chance they get when the market is in their favor. And so I don't really have much of a, you know, I don't really have much patience for that sentiment from these fucking clowns, to be honest with you. And there's not just Hoskinson. There's a lot of other fucking clowns. It's like a fucking circus car full of these dopes. And I'd prefer that, you know, we didn't support them or pretend that we care about what they say or pretend that we're all fighting on the same team. We're not. They fucking know that. And it's frustrating to see that. But, you know, I do have some sympathy for Coinbase and even maybe for the token holders, the sort of broader investing public. And it's because of this stance that Gensler has taken, very mysteriously, I have to say, about protecting retail investors. This is at the core of his mission, right? I'm doing all this stuff because retail investors don't get the proper disclosures. They don't know who owns what. They don't know where the tokens come from, blah, blah, blah. Okay. I understand what you're saying there. And I want to spin that to talk about ETH in a second. But the thing is that when it comes to investor protection, you know, Len, I'm going to rhyme you off a couple of things here that the SEC is not doing to protect investors at the moment. Congress still trades against the public every single day of the year. Up until 2 years ago, Jerome fucking Powell was trading against the public too, along with all the other Federal Reserve chairmen under blind trust. You know, I'm making air quotations for people listening on audio. That's fucking horseshit. These people are con artists, criminals, thieves, and grifters, and they've been ripping the public off for 100 years, okay, ever since they were able to do it. Pump and dumps happen every fucking time there's an IPO, specifically and most violently in big tech. Have a look at stuff like the Coinbase IPO. Have a look at all the money that's been lost in these nonsense IPOs like Rivian. How did Rivian get to go public? How did Nikola get to go public? These companies that don't have a product. Remember, there's this famous story about Nikola during an investor broadcast or during an investor presentation, literally using a pusher as the model, just pushing this thing down a hill and getting people to invest on that.
So how about when they had the truck on display in the conference and it wasn't powered by its own generating?
Yes.
It's hooked up underneath by cord.
Exactly. So this is the kind of stuff that they're quote unquote protecting you against. Okay. These people are fucking liars. Like Gensler and his ilk, these cronies, these con artist bureaucrats are fucking liars. Okay. You mentioned the Coinbase IPO. This is an interesting point. Okay. Because the S-1 that Coinbase had to file with the SEC to go public mentions this as a risk. We don't know So like a lot of people are going, well, of course they filed. The SEC knows what Coinbase trades, blah, blah, blah. The SEC, okay, I'm not an SEC sympathizer, but I'll tell you, the SEC could very easily make the opposite case. Coinbase knew that what they were trading was securities. They refused to entertain it. We told them we were going to come down on them. They still wanted to go public and we let them. And letting them, you know, are we supposed to tell them, are we supposed to say to Coinbase, well, no, you can't go public because you might be trading securities? That's not a feasible option either. And so I sympathize with the SEC on that. When the Coinbase stands get in the comments and go, well, they went public, blah, blah, blah. Like the bankless guys who make their living ripping people off on these dumb tokens and having people like Paul Grewal on, letting him talk his book. No one thinks about the other side of this story. And you don't need to be a brilliant 180 IQ legal mind to think about the other side of that coin. The SEC got Coinbase to admit that what they were doing was trafficking in illegal securities, and then they shut them down. Why is anyone surprised by that? That's not the SEC's responsibility. The other side of that coin is not, well, you let them go public. The other side of that coin, if you look at the investor protection angle, is why the fuck did you let a bunch of people buy the stock if you thought you might shut it down? That's the angle you should be talking about, because that's the angle that Gensler keeps taking. We got to protect people. You're not protecting anybody. I don't think anyone is really coming out looking good here. Gensler looks like a power-hungry clown. The SEC looks stupid. Armstrong gets on, you know, Wall Street Journal for a half an hour interview with a guy who knows fuck all. Sweet fuck all this guy knows about crypto, about the industry, about Armstrong, about Coinbase, about the token selection committee, about the way that these guys decide what to list, all this stuff. He doesn't know anything. He doesn't know fuck all. And Armstrong still chokes on the fucking answers. He tells the guy straight up. When the guy asks him, and I recommend watching this. This is on YouTube. It's like 28 minutes. This is worth your time, okay? Not like Bankless that I watch, so you guys don't have to, but this is worth your time. The guy asks Armstrong, you say that you have a token selection committee. You're not on it. Okay, fine. Does the token selection committee know which tokens that Coinbase Venture Fund, which is a venture arm of Coinbase, do they know which tokens you guys invested in? Do they consider that in the listing? He swallows hard and fucks the answer up. Another question he gets about Bitcoin. Well, the SEC, the messaging changed last year when they started telling us everything except Bitcoin was security. Well, then you didn't really need to meet with them 30 times in the last fucking year, did you, idiot? They told you last year that everything except Bitcoin was security. The clarity you were asking for, it sounds like you fucking had it already and you just didn't like the answer. I've said this on the show before. Going to the SEC 100 fucking times over a year and going, we need clarity. When the SEC tells you you're doing something wrong, you don't get to say that's not the clarity we want. There's no current public usage clause in securities laws. It doesn't matter what people are trading. It doesn't matter how many people own this garbage. It's still a security. Now, if you can't do disclosures about who owns it, which is, by the way, an under-discussed problem, the issue with these tokens being securities, Len, is that no one knows who owns what or how much of what or anything else. When I buy Apple stock, I have to submit my name, whether it's to Wealthsimple, to TD, to RBC, whoever I'm banking with. They know how much I got, when I bought it, where I live, all that stuff. Okay. But when you go to, I don't know, like what are the, I don't even know what tokens there are. I'm going to use Cardano again, although I don't think Cardano is actually a DeFi token. If you go to some DeFi token and start staking, yielding, lending, loaning, you know, licking, pumping, humping, dumping, all this garbage fucking nonsense for a year or 2 years through your Coinbase wallet, through your Ledger wallet, through your MetaMask, through your whatever, they can't fucking track it. Therein lies the problem. It's not an issue of investor protection. It's an issue of tracking, tracing, and controlling who's got what and how much. This is the common thread all the way down. And so I'll pass it back to you, but just to put a bow on this, if you think that the SEC is going to stop with this stuff, you're fucked. They're going to come for Bitcoin. They're going to find a way to make these laws work for Bitcoin. They're going to come for Ethereum. They're going to find a way to work, make these laws work for Ethereum. And they're going to want to know who's got what, where it is, when you bought it, where you live, and what you're doing with it. This is the end game for all this stuff, okay? It's about control. It's about making sure that tax regimes can stay in place as they become more oppressive. And it's making sure that people don't think they can skirt systems that are in place to protect the status quo. That's what Gensler's doing. He's protecting the status quo. He's not protecting investors. And I don't think that's even a point of debate anymore.
I'm shocked that I was pseudo defending Coinbase and you're going after them.
I'll tell you one more too. Here's one more. The SEC, Coinbase, to Coinbase's credit, okay, they did try and get this designation, this, you know, security broker, whatever designation that they're looking for from the SEC, where they can trade in crypto assets and crypto securities. So this is already a thing that exists, I believe. The SEC didn't give it to him. Tommy Tuberville, a fucking football coach turned American politician, okay, in Alabama, wrote an op-ed in the Wall Street Journal a few days ago, also free to read if you use an archive site. I'll post the archive link in the chat. Maybe I have it up here on in my tabs. Wrote an article exposing the SEC for granting one of these licenses to a company called Prometheum. The proprietor of Prometheum is a guy with a name that I cannot pronounce. He's a Chinese fellow with direct links to the CCP. Direct links. The umbrella company is called the Wang Shang Group, founded in 1969 by a guy named Liu Yangku, a former senior Communist Party official. In 2021, the Party Central Committee posthumously named him a National Excellent Communist Party member.
And where was the SEC to defend that?
That's who the SEC is giving the license to. They're giving it to this fucking guy. Where is the protection? Where is the support for the investor? Where is the support for the American entrepreneur? Whether you think that Armstrong should be making $1 billion selling shit to retards doesn't matter. Okay. What matters is there's no support for a guy who's trying to build a business onshore who is telling you that if you want to monitor users, he'll play ball. He's already playing ball with one of those chain analytic firms. I forget which one, but that was a story a few years ago. He's already playing ball with KYC AML. He's already playing ball with the banking system. He's already playing ball with everybody. And so what do? You push him offshore? Well, how does that fix? It doesn't fix anything. Like you have to break this down and wonder, are the guys at the SEC stupid or are they incompetent or are they lying or are they bribed? Are they on the take? Like, what is the problem here?
They're slow moving. Okay, so
they're not, because they gave this other firm the license. They gave the other firm the license. So how slow moving are they?
They're slow moving. It's stupid that they would give that firm the license when clearly they have links to the Chinese Communist Party. And it just leads credence to the fact that why they did this with Coinbase and then 2 years after the fact, then issue them a Wells notice and 3 months after sue them. And again, I'll say that the only thing that's really changed with Coinbase in the past 3 years, 2 years and 3 months is the staking as a service. That's the one thing I think that they could hang their hat on and say, this is what they should stop doing. And maybe that would be enough to appease the SEC, but the SEC is very slow moving. They've done this to Binance and Coinbase in June, 2023.
Can I get in front of this for a second here? Because one other thing I want to talk about, and I've heard this a few times, and the more I listen to Gensler, like I sent you guys that link in the group chat of the live show that he did at some institute, I don't know where, on Friday. And when he talks about Binance, he sprinkles in a little Coinbase. He always sprinkles in a little, here's a little thing about Coinbase.
So I'm talking
about Binance. Because he wants them to be equivalent in the eyes of the American public, the uninformed public.
Do you think there is an equivalency between the
two?
Not even fucking close. I could see there's a few things that are different.
The differences are too big for them to be mentioned in the same breath, in the same speech, in the same room, the same day. Okay. Glenn, they're fucking huge. The problem is that Binance.
There's no BNB token. There's no native token. There's no native stable coin.
Binance is commingling funds. They're commingling user funds. Binance is running shell corporations to trade against its users. He's faking market making.
Leverage trading. I'm giving you a lot here for your Coinbase argument. I agree.
Coinbase is not doing any of that. All they're doing is running afoul of securities laws that are unclear, slow moving in the most generous interpretation, intentionally deceitful in the worst. While this agency, like, they're not protecting anybody.
Welcome to regulators. I'll give you an example. Try to go look at, and for I apologize for people out there that are not familiar with this, but TFSA in Canada's tax-free savings account. Try to find legislation, regulation, policy, whatever, that shows what is dictating a day trading for
there is none. Great example.
Absolutely none. That's why they will use this gray area to their advantage, and that's fine. It's not like, but going through all this 3 months ago when Coinbase was issued a Wells notice, you knew this day was going to happen. This it was inevitable. This was going to happen, so we should not be surprised. I am shock, though, that Coinbase is standing firm on just
why. Why?
The staking as a service is definitely something that is against what the SEC wants. They've been very adamant about that. The staking as a service.
But is it against the law?
It doesn't matter if it's against the law. If the SEC, if you want to play in their yard, you have to play by their rules.
That's the problem, right?
That's the reality.
You're saying the quiet part out loud that they're also basically saying, right? That doesn't matter what the law is.
They are the commissioner of that league. And if you want to participate in that, if you want to have a team playing in that league, you have to play by the commissioner's rules.
And the other thing, Len, like the Gensler, when he starts rolling downhill, you know, he's not talking about protecting investors. He's talking about, we don't need digital currencies. We already have a digital currency. It's the US dollar.
It's dollar. What the fuck is
he's mask off, man. He is mask off. I will say just one last thing and I'll pass back to you. Bankless this week. There's been a couple of great episodes. Those guys are beside themselves. That's the whole empire collapsing because they tied their horse to all that fucking garbage for 5 years or 3 years or whatever it's been. It's all going to fucking zero, boys. Like, that's it. You're done.
I can't bring myself to listen to that trash. I got better things to do. Move on, Joey. There's still fucking tons to talk about. We'll be here till 12 o'clock. Binance, and they continue to get fucked by the long arm of the financial laws. They were served papers last week. We know that. We talked about it on the show because they're getting sued. Why? Because selling unregistered security, the whole nine yards. And the SEC, after that, moved swiftly, and they filed a restraining order to freeze Binance U.S. assets. The question I have is, how can they do this, and what happens to clients' deposits? Is this also included in the freezing of the assets? And if so, what happens to those deposits? All questions I just don't know the answers to. Hopefully you or our listeners might be able to clue me in. But anyways, Binance US reacted to all this by removing a whole bunch of advanced listing pairs. They also suspended dollar deposits, so it's strictly a crypto exchange. Can't put any dollar deposits into it. And customers, it says here that customers to pull out US dollars from the platform or have them converted to crypto. That would straight from Binance. If you have any US dollars in them, pull it out somehow, or else they're going to be converting it to crypto. And to what type of crypto? It's going to be the crypto that they choose. It could be BUSD, it could be BNB, anything. And I've been talking about this for quite some time. If you go look at the market cap of BUSD, Binance stablecoin, November of last year is when it peaked. And since then, it's been on a steady decline. Only 1 week since November, in a 7 days period of time, only 1 week has it gone up in market cap. Every other week, it's gone down. That is a telling sign that people are pulling out. I still am questioning if it's fully backed one-to-one by Fiat/treasuries, but that's another argument. But the BNB token, there seems to be questions if they're trying to support it somehow, because the price just keeps dropping, hitting a limit, and it keeps dropping and hitting another limit. So maybe there is some credence to say that they're trying to defend it. But some interesting things happened from all this in the past week. Binance US, they were selling Bitcoin at a $2,000 premium than it was just about anywhere else. And I checked it this morning, and it was a little bit of a premium. It was just a few hundred dollars higher, but that's odd that they were doing this.
Why do you think it's odd? Why do you think it's odd? I don't think it's odd at all.
I would love to know, because if it's Bitcoin, if it's a global commodity,
because because the dollars in the ecosystem aren't worth as much anymore. They are a different dollar now. And so that's why I think they're selling at a premium. It's hard for me to explain exactly what that means. Like it's almost like if you had that pair is being scrutinized now, and that the dollar is maybe not, you're not going to be able to get it out, or you're going to be in a different boat if you have it in your account, blah, blah, blah. And so, you know, let's see. That's my opinion. I don't know. You know, and Mark is in the chat too, saying the same thing. And Take the Ride is talking about them swapping like weird pairs here. There's a lot of weird shit going on. Anyway, sorry, continue. Well, continue.
I mentioned this last year when FTX failed in November. Take a look at BNB. BNB, the token, shares a lot of the same qualities that FTT did or does. I don't know if they're still around. So that shows me that there's a lot of similarities between Binance and FTX. I'm not saying that Binance is on the verge of collapse. I'm just saying if it does collapse, I really wouldn't be surprised. And I can see a number of different reasons why it would collapse. But even with all this, what happened to Binance, what happened to Coinbase. Still relatively bullish on Bitcoin. If you look at the price, and I don't really focus on the price all that much, but in this case, I will. The price didn't drop significantly. The two biggest exchanges out there, they were served notice by the SEC. I would have expected a big downward draw for the price of Bitcoin, but it didn't. And I'm going to just end it on this. Again, I've said it before, take your assets off the exchange. Hopefully it's Bitcoin, and do what you can with it to secure it. But John Reed Stark, and he's the founder and former chief of the Office of Internet Enforcement of the SEC. Quote directly from this gentleman, John Reed Stark, "Get out of crypto platforms now," end quote. With that, do what you wish. You have all the information. If you act, great. If you don't, it's on you, man.
Yeah, I think that I'll just want to talk about the Bitcoin price here briefly, and then I want to talk about another policy position Binance took, I think, as of like yesterday or 2 days ago, their TOS changed to reflect this. The Bitcoin decoupling is happening right now from crypto. There's a clear distinction being drawn now between these tokens that are quote-unquote securities, crypto securities, whatever they're called in the parlance of the day, and Bitcoin as an asset, a stalwart, energy-dependent, real-world tie-in asset. It's not the same. And more people are realizing that as you watch the bloodbath, some of those altcoins land. Like, I have a trading view list of different crypto stuff that I've like heard of or looked at over the years. And if I look at that list, I think Friday or Saturday last week, it was like a 20% off day, and Bitcoin was off. I don't think it ever made it into the 24,000 range, which, like, man, if you told me, and this is a good litmus test, honestly, take that story and move it back 2 years. What's the price of Bitcoin? Is it 15,000, 10,000? You know, like, it'd be
depending what your starting point was.
It'd be a shock, though. It'd be a shock from 25. Yeah, you'd see a big shock. Binance, and I think you hinted at this. I don't know if you hit it exactly. Binance announced 2 days ago. I say announced. They didn't announce it, in fact, but somebody caught it in the terms of service. Binance can convert these delisted cryptos to other crypto assets now without telling you. And the speculation is that they're going to use this to defend the price of BNB, which is, I think, finding a floor around 220, although Corey Clipson tweeted today that it was around between 220 and 200. And, you know, if there's one thing CZ won't do, it's announce what price he's going to defend, like his colleague Sam did back in November. That turned out to be a pretty big mistake. Let's see what happens with BNB. Let's see what happens with all these tokens. I want to see the outflows of Bitcoin from that exchange, though, Len. That's really what I want to see. And let's keep an eye on that, because the other stuff, who cares? It's all going to go to zero, I think, like we talk about all the time. But the Bitcoin, I want to know how much they hold and how many people are or are not getting it out. Binance, famously, I don't think has ever had a problem with Bitcoin coming off their exchange. So hopefully they can do that again now. CZ,
you know, 700K, that's the number of Bitcoin that's been rumored.
Yeah, I bet you he's got it. There was a story like years ago of CZ talking about how he would use his own bag to like defend the exchange if push came to shove. I think I'm remembering that correctly. Someone in the chat or listening or watching can correct me on that if I'm wrong. But I remember there was a story a few years ago about him using his own bag to defend the exchange if he had to. I wonder if he's in that bag yet. I wonder if he's pulled the cold card out of the basement, brought it up to the.
He doesn't have. It's a ledger, man. He's got so much shit coins. Yeah. It's not right. Maybe, like, maybe. Let's be honest. Well, Boomer was asking. I think it was Boomer. Are you bullish or bearish, short term, long term?
I'm bullish as all hell.
Binance goes short term. Yeah. It's definitely going to impact the price.
I don't care. I pulled out. You know. Business on air here. I pulled out a significant amount of money in cash, and I was ready to bring it to a Shoppers Drug Mart near me to fund my account. I'll tell you that. I really am hoping for a price dip, but it's less than likely I'm going to get it. It looks like, don't you think? It's kind of hanging tough here.
It's been cheap for.
And the inflation numbers are tomorrow too, right? Like, you got to think about all these. But you may not care. I don't care. Also, I think they're bullshit anyway, but all these moving parts, like, I want to, in addition to my normal buys, like, if I'm going to drop a stack, you know, if the lady at the Shoppers Drug Mart is going to look at me funny and tell me to make the QR code on my phone bigger, then it's got to be worth it. I want to make a good buy. And so I'm thinking about all these things. Maybe I'm overthinking it. I don't know.
Yeah, you definitely are. If you take a step back and you realize how far we are from, I guess we'll call it hyper Bitcoinization, and we're still a long way away from that. if you ever get to that point, no, if whenever we get to that point, what's the value of Bitcoin? Like, you're not looking at the price of one Bitcoin, what you could buy with it. You're looking at sats, what you could buy with sats, because there's only 21 million total Bitcoin, and there's so much US dollars out there. So you'd have to try to draw some connection initially to make a value, to make a connection between the two, but then eventually you get rid of it, and then you'll understand what's the value of a sat, what you can buy with it. It's still very undervalued. It's always been undervalued since Bitcoin's inception. So even if it's 5% less, 10% less, whatever it is, it's always going to be a deal because it's so undervalued. That's the way I'm looking at it. Even $100K, $200K in today's dollars, a million in today's dollars. Not financial advice, of course. It just, it seems NFA, very undervalued. Yeah. Well, Prime Trust, we could talk about that. And this is a company that offers token and fiat custody. And there was lots of rumors this past week that one of these companies like Prime Trust was going to declare bankruptcy. And it turned out that there was some action behind the scenes. BitGo, one of their competitors, their peers, whatever you want to call it, they've reached a preliminary agreement to acquire Prime Core Technologies. That's Prime Trust's parent company. This is according to sources. Nothing confirmed as of yet. And I suspect this is going to be a pennies on a dollar type deal, because from what I understand and from what people are saying, Prime Trust wasn't on very strong footing. And well, were they going to go bankrupt? Who knows, but whatever. I can say this, that in June 2022, Prime Trust raised $100 million in Series B funding. That was to add IRAs, staking to Service Suite, and so forth. What happened at $100 million beats the fuck out of me. But the fact that BitGo has reached a preliminary agreement, if they do go ahead and purchase Prime Trust, this is just consolidation in this space. And it just creates more centralization, potential attack. I'm not sure if that's going to happen, but theoretically, if you have more consolidation and you have less companies out there, an executive order could wipe out the whole industry like that. And I took a look at BitGo. They had 64 billion with a B of assets under custody. That was reported last year. I'm not sure exactly if that's changed since then. And for Prime Trust, no idea how much they had under assets. I could find no information about this. So BitGo is a very big company with how much assets they have under custody. But, you know, more centralization, obviously, this is something that should. But who the fuck is using these type of this stuff here? I know exchanges may be using it, but individuals, stay clear of this. Don't leave any of your shit on exchanges. I don't want to repeat it. I've said it a million times. But yeah, go on, Joey. It's all to you, man.
Just, I don't have much to say about Prime Trust, but I know there was a lot of talk about Prime Trust initially, obviously because of what you're mentioning there, there was some shakiness, but it was because Swan was using Prime Trust. That was the big client. And I just want to point out that I think Swan is a fine company, don't get me wrong, but Prime Trust, you know, when Swan said they moved off of Prime Trust over to a company called Fortress to do their custody, you know that that's just a copy paste of Prime Trust, right? It's the same founder. It's like almost identical. I think that's kind of weird, and I don't know what to make of that. You know, why did Prime Trust fail? It's the same guy running the show over there.
So he's no longer the CEO of Prime Trust.
I know.
Although he could be funding it, we don't know. So it could still be pulling the strings.
What is this a concern? You think if you're a Swan customer, like I again. The problem with speculating, obviously we don't know, but the problem with even having possible speculation here is that there's a better alternative. It's just storing it yourself. Like, why play these games where you have to find out who the founders are, got to listen to a million podcasts, you got to read S1s, you got to read public offerings, you got to read white papers, you got to look at boards of directors. Why? Just get a cold card and put your Bitcoin on it and shut up. Just put the thing away, bury it in your fucking backyard, whatever, okay? Don't let the generational wealth you're trying to preserve dangle on the whims of some founder who made a mistake betting on alts, who made a mistake bastardizing a yield program, whatever. Don't make the bet, man. Buy it, store it, forget about it. There's options out there. You can listen to these stories. We tell them every week. Every week we talk about stuff like this. There's no need to subject yourself to this nonsense. Buy, store it, hold it, forget about it.
Yeah, I 100% agree. And considering there's lots of anecdotal evidence out there to show you why you shouldn't leave it on the exchange. It's not like this is ancient history. You can look in the past 6 months, 1 year, and you can get enough information. And if you want to go further back, there's even more. People are lazy. That's just the reality of it. They don't want to invest the time. They would rather spend more time learning the new phone they are going to be buying and spend, you know, many hours looking into all the aspects and specs and functionality of the new phone. But they won't spend an ounce of time to try to secure their wealth. Like, if you have to break it down, what are the most important things to you? Your health, family, friends. Wealth falls in that, right? You have to spend and put the effort towards securing it, because once it's gone, you can never reclaim it again. You have to earn it again. And by doing that, you need to spend more time, and time is precious, and you can't buy that back. So it's sheer laziness. People have to take accountability and have to trust less these companies. Give them less trust.
I'll even add to that too. You're 100% right. And Take the Ride, who is a friend of the show and, you know, who I follow on Twitter, is saying that I'm going to read two tweets here about Prime Trust. Prime Trust is getting regulated out. There was a request from Connecticut. Corey talks about this with Nico on Simply Bitcoin a few days ago. There's a demand that they sell user funds for dollars, then pay out customers, which would have caused tax problems for everyone. Fine. I would point out that Nico, who does a Simply Bitcoin podcast, who I'm sure is, you know, his heart's in the right place. I'm not worried about that. But he worked for Swan, which I don't think they disclosed on that program. I saw a couple of people on Twitter pointing that out too. I didn't watch that show. But, you know, like these little things, there's in Bitcoin, the leash is so short when it comes to reputation, when it comes to honesty, when it comes to, you know, transparency and all these things. I just don't understand why. I don't understand why is basically where I'll just leave this. Okay. Cause I've already said enough, but you know, you get the idea.
Well, Swan, to their credit, they've always said fast on the message to take your,
and Corey's solid. Oh, and Take the Ride saying he disclosed that at the top of the show that he worked there. Okay, great. Oh, I heard that he didn't, but and Corey's been on the show. He's a friend of the program. He's a solid guy. And so I trust that he's making the right decisions. I think that it's hard. Like, you know, Len, even you and me talk about this sometimes when it comes to like who we bring on the show. Protecting your reputation is so hard because you just don't know what you're getting into all the time with when you have to outsource credibility, whether it's with a third party custodian or with a guest on the CBP. When you have to outsource credibility or you outsource it, you know, sort of unintentionally, you're at the mercy of these other parties. And so I think for you and me, like, I wouldn't necessarily hold it against Swan if something happened with Prime Trust. What are you supposed to do? You do the best you can. We've talked before about how, because of the nature of regulation, only the people who are, like, you know, willing to risk their business model on this stuff are doing custody in some cases, and it makes for a difficult set of circumstances for them because laws are not in their favor, and develop, like, the you know, custody solutions are not necessarily in their favor either, and all these different things. So I wouldn't necessarily hold it against Corey and team. I just think that, again, like, you know, you always say this, that you brought up a good point there. You know, when I buy a phone, I spend time looking at the specs and the camera, comparing it to different phones, watching YouTube videos, but people won't take time to do that for, you know, $1,000 in Bitcoin or $2,000 in Bitcoin if they got it, and they really should.
Yeah, because one thing is, you know, it scratches an itch. The other thing is, it's not just a need, like, that's something that's going to carry you moving forward. But let's move on. Bitcoin, the subreddit. I'm not sure if you go to that, Joey, but it's now on hiatus.
We post stuff there sometimes, right?
And you can't right now because there's a change with the APIs and they're pissed off.
Do you know the story about that? I can give you the background on that if you want in 10 seconds.
Yeah, go ahead. I could kind of give a gist of it. You probably better.
Reddit Inc. Wants to phase out third-party API requests. And so they can't do it just by banning them outright. That'll look bad. So what they're doing is they're pricing out basically every third-party. Lewis Rossman has a great video on this. You should watch that. In fact, everyone should subscribe to Lewis Rossman's YouTube channel. I might even ask him to come on the show because I think that guy is great. He is that guy's the definition of rolling downhill, and he does it in a chair much more comfortable than you or I have. I love that cat. Guy's channel. Yeah, you know, so you know that guy. He's fantastic. I love that guy's channel. But anyway, that's what's going on.
Well, he talks a lot about Graphene OS, so yeah. He's a big fan of that. Although he did erase it recently because he was causing one of the developers grief, from what I understand. But I'm not gonna get into that. I want to go back to the Bitcoin subreddit. And apparently, somebody posted a graph. They've gained in one day this past week 400,000 users. They're now surpassed 5 million in total. So that's a huge jump in a very short period of time. Probably a lot of bots. I mean, let's be honest, there's probably a ton of them are bots, but there's probably a lot of legitimate people. I think people are looking at what's going on. The SEC going after Coinbase and Binance and all this other garbage that's going on. And people are focusing more on Bitcoin. So with all this being, you know, all this, these dumpster fires around us, I still think that this is a good thing because people are going to look at Bitcoin. People are going to learn about Bitcoin. So that, I think this is rather bullish. 400,000 users. That's a lot in one day. So that's Joey.
400,000 is a lot. I did see there's a story, now that you mentioned the information, that I've seen this on Twitter. I think, was it All Caps who was replying to the Bitcoin subreddit guy saying that that looks like bot activity? I don't know.
It may be.
Yeah. I mean, either way, it's suspicious. Len, I would love nothing more than for the broader market to smarten up and come into the warm embrace of Bitcoin and hard money and, you know, long time horizons, things of this nature, cast iron cooking. By the way, you can use soap on a cast iron product. I know that's going to ruffle some feathers, but I don't really care. You know, all these.
You don't pressure wash it?
What?
You don't pressure wash it.
A cast iron pan?
Who fucking cares what you
do? Do people do that? I don't know, buddy. There's like a whole religion of cast iron.
I understand.
Online.
Yeah.
I dipped into that today for a little bit with BTC Priestess and Boomer there. Anyway, a few others. Yeah.
It's a no-win argument. But everybody has their opinions.
I shouldn't say why do you care about the Bitcoin subreddit. I should say, do you think this is an important statistic, an important metric? You think it is? How come?
Yeah, given what's transpired in the past week, it's going to show me at least that people are looking at alternatives, and instead of looking at, you know, anything that's staking, getting rewards, they're trying to find something else that is in the digital asset sphere, and they're going to Bitcoin. This is a good thing. The more people get soured because of a number of different reasons to all these shitcoins, and they come towards Bitcoin and they learn more about it, ultimately, that's a good thing. You'll still have people that want to delve into shitcoinery stuff, but as long as more and more people come to Bitcoin, learn about it, and stay, this is good. Hopefully, they don't use stuff like atomic wallets or Ledger or fucking. Yeah, that's sad. Yeah. But that's, you know, these are people we're dealing with, and I don't want to paint them all with the same brush. At all.
No, exactly. What I want is, you know, effort and exposure, and those two things together, I think, will always lead you to Bitcoin.
You know, if people come and ask questions, that's really good because then they'll get answers and they'll broaden their horizon.
Better memes here too, by the way. Way better memes on this side of the
It's closed for the next day or two, so it sucks. So you have to find some other outlet to get it. Anyways, last thing I want to say is about one of our sponsors, Bull Bitcoin, and just wanted to let people know that they've increased their daily limits for no KYC to $2,000. So that's the cash and debit. So you could go to the ATMs, sorry, not the ATMs, sorry, to Canada Post, and $2,000, you could end up buying your no KYC Bitcoin through Bull Bitcoin. And the weekly limit has been increased to $10,000. That's as effective a couple of days ago. So that's quite a bit of money you could dump into KYC free Bitcoin. And there's one change. You probably know more about this than I do. They are no longer doing LCAD. Looks like they discontinued that because of regulatory reasons or something.
Yeah, I don't know the exact details, but it's phased out. We can ask Francis next time he comes on, or we can ask him at the conference next week. It's a sparsely used token, you know, network.
Yeah, it's very, very niche. Yeah. LCAD servicing a small community.
Is what it is, right? That's I'm not that worried about it. Good to see that no KYC limit increase, though. Happy about that.
10K in a week, not too shabby. Yeah. Let's go to Clown World. And I got a few stories here. And we got an interesting stat from Danielle DiMartino Booth. And she was saying that 62% of Americans who recently purchased homes in the last year, so in 2022 and 2023. These people are not managing their mortgage payments, 62%. And on top of all this, that's a large number of people who are struggling to pay their mortgage, and it's getting worse every time they increase interest rates. But now we have student loans that have to come back into existence for paying that back. The average is $393 per month. So obviously there's going to be some people way higher than that and some people way lower, but $393 per month for these students, it's going to be around 40 million Americans. That's a sizable segment of the population that's going to have to start paying. So those people will have no hope in heck for buying a home if they haven't already got in. And if they do have a home, that 62% of people are struggling to make it, they're probably going to go higher because if they're not already captured in that statistic. So it's sad. It's sad. But I just want to say a couple more things before I pass it off to you. The people that are relatively young and people that are 35 and under, this is a stat from the Federal Reserve, Joey. The average net worth for Americans under the age of 35 is $76,300. We'll call it $76,000. This is compared to people aged 35 to 44. Their average net worth is $436,000. That is a massive disparity in just a very short period of time. That is because, in my opinion, home ownership probably made a huge difference over there. Sure. It could be something else. Maybe they invested in Bitcoin at a very early age. I do not know, but fuck, man, that's nuts. It sucks out there. If you're a young guy or gal or whatever and just don't have a home, you're going to be an outside looking for the rest of your life.
Chances are, if you have to ask if you can include your PS5 in your assets, you probably need to start doing a little bit of investing and less gaming. I do feel for the crowd who doesn't have a home. I know you and me, I say you and me, me and all the people who listen to and watch the show talk about my constant journey to trying to buy another home, trying to move out of the home I bought years ago. And, you know, my neighbor, next door neighbor, just sold their house. Without giving away too much, my next door neighbor's house is... Let's just say it's between 1,000 and 1,500 square feet. And the place needs a new roof. The backyard is like absolutely torched. It's basically like an eyesore. The only laundry hookup in the house is in the kitchen on the main floor. And the house in general is just not well maintained. You may remember years ago, if you're an OG listener of this podcast, I had a battle about building a fence in between the two houses because my neighbor just didn't want to pay any money for a fence.
Same guy?
Same person. Yeah, a long time ago. And so you can go back in the CBP archives for that, back when I didn't care what I said on the show when no one was listening. So that place just sold for, in my opinion, like way too much money, way too much money. But now my wife and I are like, okay, let's sell the place. Who cares if we find a house right away? I got another option here for living, and so I'll just sell my place at whatever number and go from there. Because it, to me, although I keep seeing, and it's funny, if you listen to friend of the show, Ron Butler's podcast, Angry Mortgage, he talks about this all the time. I swear to God, he's listening to our show, because I know we say this all the time too, and a lot of Bitcoiners say this. On one hand, you see that every political party left of center, even a little bit to the right of center in Canada, the conservatives, right, are a little bit right of the Canadian center. Everyone is making this push to get the vote of the sort of disenfranchised youth, the youth who's unable to afford a home, can't afford a car, can't afford rent, can't afford groceries, you know, whatever. But every policy pushes the other direction. In the first quarter of 2023, we took in, what was it, 400,000 people or something like that? Some insane number.
Yeah,
like
it was a record number.
Yeah, like it's just insanely high. And I know there's some stories about how Canada, you know, brings in whatever number, but only about 35% of them actually get their citizenship and stay these days because the cost of everything is just driving them away. You know, I got news for you. 35% of a million people is still too many for the country to take in every year if we're not building any infrastructure. And, you know, to your point, Len, about the net worth, again, if you want to know why people spend a bunch of money and time looking into altcoins and buying NFTs, this is why. Because there's no other opportunity, there's no other alternative. They see one or two guys make it big online and they try and do the same thing. And so while I don't agree with the methods, I have sympathy for the madness, I gotta tell you, because it just seems to me like there's some despair there that right now is just another story in clown world. But if it continues, Len, you know, it's not going to be clown world. It's going to be something more serious, more severe, and with broad societal impacts. If they're not happening already, it's probably not that far off.
Yeah, 100%. They're trying to hit a home run any way they can. And it's too bad they're going to get wrecked in the process. With little funding they do have, it's just going to be lost in buying these NFTs or shit coins. But I can understand why they're pissed off. I'd be in the same position as them. I'd be angry as fuck as well. Because you can look at, you know, remember the debt ceiling? And I got a number here. The debt ceiling, they were saying the whole thing was going to collapse because they were going to run out of money. That was never going to happen. But as soon as they raised the debt ceiling and it was suspended, $359 billion $350 was raised from that in the first day. The first day. So when you raise it one day, 359, that's a lot of money. That's a lot. I love that. That was Janet Yellen going out there. Anybody want this treasury? Here you go. And then even in all that madness, and, you know, you go look at what's going on in the United States, people, their homes are getting too expensive for some people, people losing jobs, inner cities, they're a war zone in some respects. You look at them now, it looks like something from, you know,
Chirac, man. If you follow Real Fly on Twitter, for every single mass shooting tragedy, they are tragedies. Okay, so don't twist my words up here, mm-hmm. aggregators. You know, we talk about 5 people shot in a school or 10 people shot in a school. Those are terrible instances. Every week in Chicago, it's 50 plus people. Every single weekend in Chicago.
What a disaster that city is.
You can't live there. It's too dangerous. You can't. Yeah. I am actually secretly, Len, I haven't been to Toronto for an extended period of time in a long time. And so I'll be there for 3 days, obviously, this weekend. I'm looking forward to seeing what that city looks like after dark. Because I'm thinking it's probably not going to be pretty. And it's not just going to be not pretty because it's a big city. I think it's going to be not pretty because it's going to be significant problems with drugs, alcohol, you know, sort of vagrant screaming hobos. All signs of decay, man. All signs of decay.
Yeah. And, you know, even with all that, you know, the decay, I mean, I'm talking more in the U.S., they're still setting boatloads of money to Ukraine, another $2.1 billion they decided to send over to them. Now, I understand why they're doing it. I don't want to get into that just yet. I'll talk about more later in the show. But, man, it just seems like they're focusing on the wrong things. You know, there's people at home that are just getting smoked and for a number of different reasons, and they're sending all this money that could be, I think, you know, better spent elsewhere. But
how much went to the Ukraine, you know, since the debt ceiling
in totality?
How much went to DIE outreach, you know, in the third world or even in like, you know, American schools? How much went to all these things? It doesn't matter. And again, like, I think the problem, this is like out on the curve for me, but I'm really tired and I just don't care. The problem with stuff like, you know, ideological outreach programs, to put it kindly, in the States and in Canada, is not that those causes are no good. I don't care what you think about those causes personally, but it's clear that there are other things that should be taking priority when it comes to how we spend taxpayer dollars in the modern world. And the failures are everywhere. They're multiplying and they're becoming more consequential for the average person, but no one seems to care, right? They pluck, what do they say? The best way to pluck a bird is to just keep pulling feathers until the thing squawks. And right now, no one's squawking. But
we're down
a fuck ton of feathers, I'll tell you that.
Save this this thinking, because I got a story later that is going to really hit home. But let's go to Clown World North. And leading off, the Bank of Canada decided to raise rates yet again by 25 basis points. This is after they've halted for a period of time, and it's, you know, it is what it is. And even with that, our finance minister came out saying there's no other country in the world better positioned for a soft landing than Canada. So there's still hope from the people in charge that we are going to be getting a soft landing. And she's even quoted saying, "We are very close to the end of this difficult time, and to return to low, stable inflation and strong, steady growth." So I'm reading this and I'm suspecting that they're looking to have low rates eventually, because if they're going to want low, stable inflation and strong, steady growth will happen in a low interest rate environment. So this may be credence that there may be a pivot in a not too distant future. But even with all this, the fact that we're better suited for a better position for a soft landing than anybody else, Canada lost 17,000 jobs in the month of May, and unemployment rose over here to 5.2%. And this is going to be the norm moving forward. Yeah. Rates were raised, so you're going to expect more and more belt tightening from businesses moving forward, and expect more job loss numbers like this as we transition through the summer. So yeah, scary stuff.
I'm going to pull up the notes that I made for the show with Greg Foss last week, because this is important stuff. Highest rates since 2007. April inflation was 4.4%. The average home price in Canada up $100,000 since January. Since January, $100,000. The IMF says we're the country at most risk of mortgage defaults of all the G7. Could be of the G20. You mentioned our finance minister and the things she was saying to the press gallery. You know, on one hand, TIFF is trying to tighten the labor market and wants to see more unemployment. On the other hand, Freeland is saying that the jobs market is a positive and we should be able to be like, we should be able to sustain through any economic downturn because the job market is so resilient. Help me understand that. Does the left hand, like, is Peter stealing from John to pay Paul? Like, what's happening, right? I don't understand how those two things can be said in the same breath by two people presumably working toward the same goals. If they're not working toward the same goals, then let's talk about it, right? What do you want? I think both parties want sustained growth and low inflation with a rate environment that's conducive to new businesses and general prosperity, whatever that is, okay? Difficult to define these things, of course, but what we're getting in public statements is much, much, much different. I don't know what Canadians are supposed to do. You know, then when you sprinkle on top of that, that 2 years ago, TIFF, you know, was very clear with people and said that rates are going to be low for a long time, take as much debt as you want, doesn't matter. How are you supposed to compete? How does a young Canadian family, you know, how do they make ends meet? I don't know. I think about me, like my mortgage, I was on variable rate for, I think I renewed my mortgage in 2020, maybe, pretty sure, 5-year variable. And, you know, our mortgage has gone up, I don't know, 40% in the 3 years we've had it. Most of that, obviously, all of it in the last year and a half. And I always say that, like, you know, my wife and I are pretty good with money and have well-paying jobs and don't worry about it too much. But if you're a guy who's in one of these industries that Tiff Macklem wants to put the squeeze on, you know, how what are you supposed to do? You're getting it from both sides. Oh, it's killing demand. Yeah, but it's killing you too. Like, family dissolution happens in those situations. You know, the famous scene from The Big Short there, that just don't fucking dance. Like, when you start doing this, it's numbers on a page for the Federal Reserve or for the BOC, mm-hmm. but there's real consequences for people. You know, and I joke about my neighbor selling their place or whatever, but like, Len, my wife and I, you know, we are not sure, like, because I don't understand why they sold. Maybe they have some other needs, but I look at a lot of the places we see when we're looking for a home. And I'll tell you that a lot of the places we go to, doesn't matter how nice they're on the inside, doesn't matter how nice the area is, there's always like one thing that needs to be done that the person's just not getting done. Usually it's the roof or like the driveway, like a big 5-figure spend. They just can't do it. And I sometimes think, like, is it because they can't afford it? Like, are these people really selling the house because they want to downsize and they just don't want to do the repairs? I think that's going to become more common. I don't know. Like, I'm speculating, which I shouldn't be doing on this show, but it's hard not to think about the real consequences of these, you know, statistical levers that unelected people are pulling all the time to try and fix the economy. They have real effects on people, man. Real effects on people. I feel bad for kids who are part of families that are having problems with mortgage payments or the cost of food. You know, it's really sad. And Canada, you know, I think we've been fed this kind of lie for a long time. I'm a little younger than you, and I remember in school, the thing all the time was, we're the best country in the world to live in. All these surveys say we're the best country, best country, best country. America is violent. It's racist. It's, you know, a place that's chaotic and only caters to the rich. Like, I don't fucking know, man. It looks to me like we're a lot of those things, and that maybe the immigrant population who was coming here and staying here has started to catch on to that too. The birth rate, you know, is low here and low in other places as well with similar problems. A lot of issues, not specific to Canada, but certainly we could lead the way in trying to fix them. It seems that we're unwilling to do so though at the moment.
In a lot of ways, Joey, we still are really, really good. And we're so well off in comparison to a lot of other countries. So, you know, could be a lot worse. And I'm not using this as a, you know, second best as your participation award. You know, we don't have a lot of the garbage that the US does in terms of, you know, you were talking about, you're interested to see what it's like in Toronto. I'm sure it's not the same as you would have the same size other city, like Chicago, for instance. Population wise, roughly the same as Toronto. That's a little bit smaller, I think. And 50 murders a day versus what, 100 a year versus Toronto. That's a huge difference. You know,
Chicago is three times the size of Toronto
in terms of Chicago proper
populations, both 2.7 million.
Toronto is 2.
I thought Toronto was like one.
No, it's like 2. Toronto is the third largest Fourth largest city in North America, something after Mexico City, New York, LA, Toronto.
Yeah, Toronto 2.93. It's bigger.
It surpassed Chicago recently.
Wow, I'm looking at, I must be looking at numbers from 1999. I still think about the, I still think about the signs that I used to see driving in the city. That's how I think about population.
I think it's the fourth largest in North America by population.
Maybe. So, yeah, I don't know. That's a big city, but though, for sure.
It is. But anyways, let's move on to talk a little bit more about Toronto. And the it will take somebody in Toronto or somebody wanting to live in Toronto a median annual income of $91,850. We'll call it $92,000. So if you're that's $92,000, about 25 years to save for a down payment. That's insane. 25 years of earning that much money. This is according to the National Bank of Canada. And this is a, from their affordability report. And the report is looking at the monthly mortgage payment, assuming a 25-year amortization for locking it at 5 years. So it would take somebody 25 years earning $92,000 to save up for the down payment required to buy a home in Toronto. In fact, it's the household needs a qualifying income of $236,000.
That's fucking insane.
To afford the representative home in Toronto, which the average market is $1.16 million. So your qualifying income as a household, $236,000.
That's an insurmountable. That's right away. It's insurmountable.
Yeah, it is. It really, it's the haves and the have-nots. If you are in the system and you have a property, you can then parlay it for something bigger or smaller, whatever. You have lots of opportunities. So people that don't, they're sitting on cash or cash equivalents, and good luck. In Canada, the price, especially in the Greater Toronto area and also a few other parts in the country, it has just been gangbusters if you've held on to it. Now, it doesn't, not to say it comes without any risk. There's a heck of a lot of risk of holding it, but man, it's been really good for people that have held on to homes and have done so for a long period of time. So fucking nuts, man.
It's interesting. Boomer is making a good point here that I think we should talk about. And then we'll talk about take the rides point as well. Boomer saying that people rely on the bank of mom and dad when they need help buying a house. That's true. You know, I took a loan from my dad when I bought this place, I don't know, 7, 8 years ago, whenever that was. When bonds get racked, like Boomer is saying, it's going to cause a problem. I would even take that one step further. I know a lot of people, and this is not an original thought, but I've, you know, given it some time and I think fleshed out a little bit of it, maybe more than I've seen on Twitter. I've made the case on this program before that real estate is the most important thing to the Canadian economy. And whatever crazy taxes come in on stuff like Bitcoin, or you know, if they reduce the amount of money you can put in your TFSA or reduce other tax efficiencies in your RSP or whatever, the one thing you can always count on is real estate is going to stay high because there's just so much riding on that in the Canadian economy. I still think that's a valid point. I still think that's a possible outcome, but more and more I think that as the tax base declines, and it is declining, The per capita GDP, as Rich Diaz always points out, is stagnant in Canada and has been for more than a decade. As the tax base, as the tax receipts decline and the need for expenditures for guarantees expands, it's not just pensions, it's healthcare, roads, hospitals, like teachers, all this stuff, police as the population grows, there's going to need to be some extra money coming into the coffers. And the more I think about it, Len, when everyone talks about this great wealth transfer, I didn't agree with this the first time I saw it, but when everyone talks about this great wealth transfer, now I think that there's a real chance governments put a kibosh on that.
A primary residence?
It's not just a primary residence. So I'm talking like, you know, if I think about a family where, you know, the mother and father have, you know, let's say they got a house and a rental or a couple of rentals and, you know, an investment portfolio, a pension, all these things, right? All the stuff that boomers really came up with, right? There's not a lot of boomers who worked in even like factories and stuff who don't have pensions. And so they were able to save money and buy hard assets in a way that a lot of other people weren't. So I think that there's a chance that the tax regime changes to take some of that wealth when boomers die, or even when they try and pass it to their offspring before death, because I just don't see any other way that governments are going to be able to get those tax receipts up. It doesn't seem to me to be the case, short of, you know, something like UBI where they're printing money and just taking some back or whatever. But we don't seem willing to use natural resources here. We don't seem willing to build out infrastructure any other way, and tax receipts are low and dropping. Take the ride, making note, the Port of Vancouver is the largest port in Canada, 15% of the U.S. inbound and outbound. Talking about some of the average single-family home costs up from $82,000 to $102,000 over the course of a year. That's $19,000. Like, that's a lot, man. There's a lot of stuff going on here that's not great for people who are looking to move up in life. And I think, Len, like, I don't want to ask you personal questions because it's not fair to do that, put you on the spot. But, like, you know, if you had to guess whether or not your daughter would earn and live more and better than you and your wife live, would you guess yes or would you guess no?
No way. It would not the way things are trending. Something has to change drastically for that.
Yeah. So why then, like, when people wonder why the birth rate's so low or why people are leaving, like, if that's the answer that you give, and you're a pretty optimistic guy, generally speaking, I think, you know, I don't want to speak for you, but I can't imagine that a lot of people feel differently, honestly. There was stories years ago, I remember when I was in, like, high school, university, that my generation would be the first that, you know, made less in their lifetime than their parents, you know, in the last 200 years. And it seems to me to probably be the case. I mean, unless this podcast, like, really rips, but for the moment,
and we gave away 14,000 sats last
year. Yeah, exactly.
At the top of the show, I was talking how much value a sat would have. So we gave away a heck of a lot of value over there. Right? In terms of taxing all these opportunities, like, there's opportunities for taxing things that aren't yet taxed, like primary residence or a whole bunch of other things. The people that are in those positions, they're older, right? And they're, unfortunately, they're becoming less prominent voting bloc as the fact that they, you know, they leave this earth. So if you're a politician, you're going to pander to the people that are in a majority. And if the majority are not them, well, then you have a whole new voting block that have a whole different set of priorities and wants and needs. And so everything, the laws, the policies, the regulations are going to reflect that. So there's going to be a change over time as these older people just pass on or just stop voting for whatever reason. So
apathy at the ballot box, a whole other story, but you're right. Yeah. It's something to consider.
And the last thing I'm going to say before we wrap things up is Canada announced that they're going to send another $500 million to Ukraine.
Insane.
And I can understand why they're doing it. I mean, the rationale is they don't want the war to progress any further and maybe end up on Poland's door and maybe go even further west. I could totally understand the rationale for here, but I don't know. There's only so many dollars that could go around. That's just the way I'm looking at it. And I'm justifying it based on a couple of stories here. And number one, this story came out in April of 2023. I totally missed it from the Ottawa Citizen. And in April, it was talking about Canadian troops that were stationed in Poland. They're not being reimbursed for meals. And they were there in Poland to train Ukrainian military personnel. And Canada did not send any cooks on particular mission. And its troops were told to eat at local restaurants. So they had to pay out of pocket and were trying to get reimbursed. But they're saying there's a massive backlog. This is back in April. I'm not sure if things have been resolved since then. But they're saying there's a massive backlog with the Canadian forces for reimbursing the soldiers for those costs. And they're sending them into debt or even worse, hopefully not bankruptcy. And so they're supposed to be done on a monthly basis, these reimbursements, but there's just a huge backlog. And that's number one. And the second thing I want to talk about, there's not enough money to go around, is CBC from June 5th, an article saying that there's an embarrassing gear shortage that have Canadian troops in Latvia buying their own helmets. And they've been buying their own modern ballistic helmets equipped with built-in hearing protection that doubles as a headset. And they are also purchasing rain gear and vests and belts to carry their water and ammunition. And they're saying there's a number of complaints about ill-fitting body armor issued to female soldiers, that this is a growing complaints that they're getting. And it's too bad. And they're saying these purchases, usually made through online realtors, involve brand name tactical gear or weapon accessories then to make this existing soldier gear more personal or more comfortable to wear. So here's a couple of stories that it seems to me there's not enough dollars to deal with their soldiers that are stationed abroad. And it's too bad, because when you enlist in the military, mm-hmm. you're giving your life to potentially for the nation. And
It's and all you need is a and let me finish that sentence for you. And all you're asking for is a fucking helmet and a thing to carry your water, and you can't get it.
And food. Which they weren't getting paid, or they weren't. They didn't have a cook to feed them, so they had to pay their own way, and then they didn't get reimbursed. So when I see that $500 million go to Ukraine, so I just want to say, like, I understand what they're trying to achieve here. But looking at this, man, there may be ways that you could maybe divvy it up, maybe send 250 to Ukraine and then keep the rest and send it to the soldiers that are fighting for food and gear.
Why don't you? You got to get in the strategic meetings. You got to get in there with the – I can just picture you with the whiteboard. Like, hear me out here. Listen to this. Divvy it up. Well, trust me.
This shows me there's not enough money to go around. And they just that's just a reality.
It's ill prioritized, right? It seems. Yeah. I think it's fair to say.
This is on top of the United States. They also had similar problems where back late last year, there's reports that the U.S. Army was dangerously low on ammunition because they were sending so much ammunition to Ukraine and they were firing it faster than their Ohio munitions factory can create it. Looking at this, it seems that Canada, United States, militarily may be in a position that are very weak. I'm not saying that they can be attacked. It could happen anytime. But I'm not sure if they have the ability to defend themselves. If they can't feed themselves, if they have to buy their own gear, they don't have enough bullets to shoot the enemy. I'm looking at this. This is not a good situation to be in. And, you know, if there's ever an invasion, probably will never happen. But if there's ever an invasion, they don't have the ability to defend it. And the SPR being drained to half capacity from where it was a couple of years ago, any prolonged war, man, they'll just run out. And it's just a sad situation.
I mean, Narwhal Tacos in the chat saying, I think what most of us are thinking, that most of the money that we give to Ukraine, not just us, but many places, you know, like it's completely unaccounted for. The U.S. is having this problem pretty publicly at this point. War is never good, man. And, you know, there's an entire multi-hundred billion, trillion dollar complex in the States and the modern world that relies on hawks to just constantly be shooting somebody to keep their business floating. And when you have that problem, you get, you know, this kind of stuff. It's sad, man. This is why when people buy Bitcoin, and I've said this before, but just to rehash, when people buy Bitcoin, they are not buying it because they're, you know, I think of some of the things my friends have said to me, especially years ago when the price was in the tank, like, you're crazy. It's a waste of money. It's too risky. It's never going to work. The system's never going to collapse. I don't know, man. Like, why wouldn't you want to have some money parked outside of all this insanity? Even if you agreed with the policy of the monetary elements of the government, there's so many other things going on that just tell you that this whole system is not long for this world at this point. And I realize that, of course, gold bugs and others have been saying this for a long time, but it doesn't feel close. Maybe it just feels close because we're close to it. And, you know, maybe we're the ones that are wrong. You know, why are we so important that we're the generation that's going to see the collapse when all the others thought before us that they were going to be the ones? But to me, I just can't imagine having all your money tied up in all this stuff. It's just clearly cheating going on in the stock market, clearly cheating going on in crypto, clearly cheating going on in housing, money being thrown overseas at God knows what, for God knows what reason. News media that just constantly fucking lies no matter what the content or subject matter is. It's always a fucking lie or a spin. You got to have something outside of this because eventually that there's going to be a threshold of people that just cross and never look back. And you don't want to be the last one over that line.
Yeah, Saif al-Din was saying that people that look at this and when they first come across it, they're going to say, wow, this thing is just on the verge of collapse because there's just so many things wrong. But for whatever reason, they have fiat currency seems to have a lot of momentum that is hard to stop. And he even uses Lebanon as the example. I know they're going through hyperinflation right now, but it took a lot to get to this point. And they don't have very much the same that Canada has, for instance, where we have a lot of resources we could pawn off that makes the Canadian dollar at least have some value to it. So, and if you look at that and if you take this into context, that then it's going to be some time before this eventually does collapse, just because it's just historically, it doesn't happen so quickly. There's just a long and drawn out process. You can protect yourself in the meantime, though.
Yeah. I just want to add one thing here at the risk of getting our channel demonetized and banned off the internet and being banished into the netherworld. Did you see this Blacklock's report from the Privy Council about the communication around the COVID vaccines?
I cannot
recommend that enough. I almost paid for Blacklocks to read that whole thing. If you want to see something emblematic of what's gone on in media, in everything over the last 3 years, that is the thing to read. And the thing to ask yourself, even if you are an impartial third party observer with no skin in the game, you cannot read that and think that everything is okay. You cannot read that and think that the money you have in the bank and the stock market in your house is okay, that the wealth you've amassed is okay, that the family you're trying to raise is going to be okay on the things that worked in the last war. You're fighting the last war all the time, as the saying goes. The next thing is going to be money outside that system. I promise you that. That's not financial advice, of course. We don't give financial advice on this program, but I am carrying myself in this way, and I think that people should consider doing that as well.
It's an opportunity to take a step back. And I think it's a good thing that things aren't happening so quickly. If things are transitioning to one direction, we could all see it. But it's doing at a pace that may not be in agreement with everybody. People want to see things move faster. And I think that there's a benefit to that. Is if you take a step back and look at Bitcoin and you weigh the pros and cons, what Bitcoin does right, what Bitcoin does wrong. And we could rhyme them off if you want. But the fact that the longer this whole thing takes to collapse, there's more opportunity for things to improve with Bitcoin, because let's be perfectly frank, it's not ready for prime time. It's not ready to replace the US dollar. It's not ready to replace the Canadian dollar. Average 10 minutes for a transaction on Base Chain just doesn't really work for everyday purchases. Maybe big purchases like
homes and cars. Is it ready to replace traditional wealth savings vehicles, Len?
Maybe, but that's one aspect. You want it to replace it in entirety, like we're talking the whole monetary system, including the issuance or replacing of currency, US dollars, Canadian dollars, and so forth. It's not ready. Lightning is, from what I gather, I don't have enough information for this. I could be wrong, but it can't scale to the degree we need it. So there's going to be a limitation to that. Maybe Arc may work in conjunction with it, or maybe it will replace Lightning, or maybe Lightning is going to improve. I don't know. But you need something like that for everyday purchases. That's the way it operates. So on-chain works, I guess, for large purchases. But again, even that is problematic because it's slow and you have to pay for higher transaction fees. And if everybody's using it, then it's going to be a very expensive transaction, because we saw what happened with ordinals.
Yeah.
When it became more, it clogged up the network, the fees increased. But imagine if 1 billion people, 2 billion people, 7 billion people come on a network.
Yeah, network traffic is coming, right? Regardless of whether it's JPEGs or adoption. Yeah.
But there's a lot that, Bitcoin does really well. I mean, it's defended itself against all these attacks, hacks, scams, you name it. And the horse has left the barn. There's no way really to stop it.
Yeah.
There may be ways to slow it down, but stop it in totality, I can't wrap my head away to do it. Maybe I'm just narrowing.
Doesn't sound
my
like
thought.
The SEC thinks they can do it either. And I wanted to mention this earlier, and maybe we can close on this because it's getting late and I have to call my realtor. She's messaging me. But you asked earlier why Ethereum's not mentioned in any of these suits. And I think that it's the same reason you don't see Bitcoin really front and center, and the messaging, quote unquote messaging, changed over the last year. The reason that they're not talking about Ethereum yet is because it's a more sophisticated system to take down. And Bitcoin is the most sophisticated system to take down. It's global, decentralized money based on energy. People run nodes, they run mining hardware, they do all these things. And, I think you're right, Len, that there's no way that's going to be easy to shut it down. But again, I am such a simp for Sovereign Individual, but you guys, you really got to know what's in that book, because it's like a crystal ball, the things that these guys have written about, over the years. And there's other predictions they've made that, seem to be coming to fruition here shortly, or will be coming to fruition here shortly. There's so much going on that we don't know enough about yet on the side of what governments have planned. And so, you have to be resilient in a number of ways. And the network distribution is one thing, but privacy and, like Len says, layer twos and things like this is important, man. It's all important.
Well, if you really want to think about it, I don't want to go too long on this. I know you, I'll just be quick. Theoretically, if one is to buy Bitcoin KYC, and theoretically, if one puts that on a cold card and that XPub has never been on any public node, you use your own node and you're properly using Tails and
secured,
you have that. And there is no way that anybody would know that that individual has X amount of Bitcoin. You are totally off the grid. You're flying under the radar. And that is that. So with that in mind, with that amount of power behind it, with it's impossible then to really wreck this system. Man, there's a lot of power you have when you have your own node. There's a lot of power you have when you could secure things offline with KYC, free Bitcoin. You just don't have this with just about anything else. Like ETH, they could stop any transaction at any time and they could make your ETH null and void.
The validators, the OFAC compliance, it's just one, you know, shit show after another over there. I've said a lot of curse words tonight, way more than I usually say, but
fuck it, it's all good. So let's end it at that, Joe. You have lots of things to do in this.
I don't have a Bitcoin of the week, no coin of the week. I'll just, you know, I'd put the people that there's a lot of good content out there about the SEC. I want to give a shout out to Boomer for turning me on to the Marty Bent podcast, The Last Trade. Which I had no idea even existed until last week. So I was listening to that.
It's brand new.
The last few days. It's very good. It's very good. I like listening to Marty and friends talk about Bitcoin and sort of its relation to traditional finance. It's a favorite subject of mine when I have podcasts on. I'm glad they're doing that.
And shout out to Mark. He sponsors us indirectly with EasyDNS. He's in the chat right now. So Mark,
yeah, thank
you for coming on. And appreciate you giving me the information that passed on to somebody else who had some technical issues or questions. Not really issues.
For a URL, we still can't share.
Yeah, I don't want to. We'll call it Turbo. That's the and people or Boost or something along those lines. People could make the connections there, but that's far
out. What a day. God bless, man. If you're on audio, come over to the app show. We'll talk for a couple minutes. I won't leave you hanging, Len. And if not, man, I'll see you this weekend. I hope we see a lot of you guys this weekend in Toronto, whether you're going to the conference or just coming to hang out. I will make sure that my liver and kidneys are ready to drink a few more pints than I usually would on a Friday night, just to make sure I talk to all you guys and girls. I'm looking forward to seeing everyone and meeting some of you for the first time. So it should be exciting.
Yeah. If you do see me around, come and say hello. I'd like to meet anybody that's there, and especially people that listen to the show. People hate me even better. Come and say hello to me. I'll be happy to talk to you as well.
We'll put you on the fucking sign behind them next week.
No. Come on, man. Everybody has their personal likes and dislikes, and that's cool, man.
God bless them. Take care, everyone. We'll see you soon.
Yeah, take care and PB.